And gentlemen, hear me now. It's Vinnie Eastwood from the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Hey, well, you know, there's been some a lot of news come out over the weekend. I've managed to get maybe. I don't know. I think I've definitely managed to get at least enough sleep to sustain me. However, there's a lot of bad news. But starting off with the good news, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, my YouTube channel, is the number one YouTube channel in New Zealand in terms of partners, and number two in terms of reporters. And that's as of this morning. So I'm quite happy about that. We've had a small amount of donations coming through the website. I'd like to thank wholeheartedly all those who are willing to give up their hard-earned cash to support this show and this network. If you'd like to support the show, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com or gorillamedia.co.nz. And click on the subscribe button, $5 a week, just as a small weekly payment to finance our operation here. And we'll send you a free DVD that I've made full of my videos and things. And also, every 3 months, you'll get another free DVD. So how about that? Go to Guerrilla Media or the Vinnie Eastwood Show, click on the subscribe button. Support what we're doing here. We're trying to basically build the definitive alternative media clique in New Zealand, going trans-Tasman and also trans-Pacific, all the way across the world, broadcasting live from the future. I'd like to count on everybody for their support there. Now, very important news, just extremely quickly. If you have access to sushi, go and eat some of it. Not because it'll support the Japanese economy, because they get free seafood delivered coastal, as you see on the news. And essentially it's because of the seaweed. It'll fulfill your iodine so that all the iodine radiation doesn't infect your thyroid. Get some potassium iodate and some seaweed and get it now before the mainstream media starts talking about this, and because all the supplies will be stretched to the limit. All right? Protect yourself. Protect your family. This radiation is going to go absolutely everywhere. Okay? There is no escaping it. The meltdowns are happening. It's been reported in mainstream media and across Associated Press. Do not take any chances. Protect yourself, protect your family, and keep listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man. He's gonna take me to that little room.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Speaking of GorillaMedia.co.nz, there are some amazing headlines that I would recommend that everybody, and I mean right now, like this is a freaking emergency type situation, go to GorillaMedia.co.nz and have a look. Just keep scrolling down towards those headlines, okay? First headline here, report. Earthquake weapons caused Japan's tsunami, and Ken Ring's anti-scientific discourse is Benjamin Fulford on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's a video of the show that we did the other day. That video got 400 hits in 22 hours. And in the last 24 hours, I woke up this morning, and it has shot up to 1,400. It is an information-packed video, both with some skeptical point of view from our KFM invitee, Shannon Phipps. I would highly recommend everybody go and see that because, I made my friend listen to it earlier today, and it freaked her out something chronic. And so it should, because it's reality. Reality is not supposed to be easy to deal with. Second headline, efforts to prevent meltdowns in Japan. Operations to relieve pressure in the containment of Fukushima Daiichi 3 have taken place after the failure of a core coolant system. Seawater is being injected to make certain of core cooling. Malfunctions have hampered efforts, but there are strong indications of stability. This is a lie. There is a meltdown. It's been admitted. AP has reported on this by the Japanese government. There is a meltdown. It has happened. And there is not just the one reactor that's in danger of melting down, or rather has, because of this huge explosion with a mushroom cloud 400 meters in the air. And there are radiation reports coming from all over the area where this explosion happened at about 1,000 times normal. This is an incredibly dangerous situation. Now, the way to deal with this is, incidentally, if you live in Japan, this will probably be happening for you already. You need to eat some kelp. So, ironically, and this is, you know, it's the lighter side of genocide on this show. Despite the possibility of it being earthquake weapons, and of course I'd have people on both sides of the camp say it's not a possibility, it's fact, it's not a possibility, it's fiction. Despite all those claims, I find it very interesting that Japan, the place where people eat seafood, sushi, and kelp all the time, is the one place that can save the world from the radiation originating in Japan. And interestingly enough, if everybody takes my advice, because this is what I'm doing, I just filled up on kelp this afternoon for lunch. Get it through your head. The thyroid itself absorbs iodine, whatever available iodine is there. So if you fill it up with good iodine from natural plant sources, or you can take a potassium iodate. It's a supplement that you can get in chemists. That's if they're not sold out, which I believe many are at the moment. And that's just us. That's just us, the truth movement people who know what the hell is going on in this country and around the world. We're the ones all running in there to buy it already, and it's sold out. So imagine what happens once they start broadcasting it. You won't be able to find it at all. So, you know, act quick is what I'm saying. And the best part about my little scheme here to save the human race from radiation poisoning is that if everybody becomes a mass consumer of sushi, it'll help the fractured Japanese economy come back again. Isn't that great? Disaster happens. Incidentally, the solution is right there. And everybody gets to enjoy some fine sushi. Not that bad after all. but it is a horrible, horrible disaster. Oh my God. Oh my God. You've even seen the pictures by now. You see, like, entire townships that have been there for generations, just nothing. Nothing left. All gone. All the history, all the culture, all the artifacts, everything, just, it's just not there anymore. Worst disaster since World War II, according to the Japanese Prime Minister. I'll say, you can add another nuclear element into that. Just imagine the scale, if you will. I mean, take New Zealand. Small country, 4 million people. 300,000 of our people and few of our cities. Like if it was just Christchurch, Wellington, Tauranga, New Plymouth, Hamilton, hopefully not Auckland because that's where I am, get wiped completely off the map. It would be like the country being cut into a third. You know, like the rest of it had just been cut out. All your supply lines, all your food, all your water, all your electricity, everything that is capable of sustaining modern life vanished in an instant. Now, fortunately, Japan doesn't have a crisis on quite such a per capita scale as if similar events had happened in New Zealand. You know, you've got to look on the lighter side of genocide, I always say. The difficulty here for the Japanese people is the rebuilding, the protecting their people from radiation, and the military is now being dispatched in full hazmat suits, so you know what's going on. The fact that they can't contain it, the fact that all food, fuel, electricity, phone lines into these mainly washed out areas, all gone. There's nothing there. Had some news reporters from TV3 cruising in the middle of the night, get stopped by a police officer at a checkpoint on his way into the quake zone, and there's nothing on the road, nothing. Nothing whatsoever. And they go in by themselves, fully warned that there is no electricity, no food, no fuel, fully warned. And they just do a report live from the middle of a village that is no longer a village. It's basically just a pile of driftwood, an enormous pile of driftwood as far as the eye can see. Like nothing remains. You know, people have come through and they've picked little possessions out of the wreckage of their homes. And supposedly this is coming to a town near you, according to many sources that I've been talking to, that this is only the beginning. And we're going to see massive, massive ongoing consequences from this. You know? Look at my corner phrase here. 2011 is the new 2012. It's fashionable. Think about the end of the world at this point. Yeah, because let's face it, you know, blown out of proportion by the media, as everything is, you know. Earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, fires, biblical proportions. It would appear that something has gone quite awry all of a sudden. But then again, what's the general land area and versus the probability of it actually happening to you and not just somebody in your country and one chunk of your country? Like when the earthquake hit Christchurch, the rest of the country's like, wow, that's really bad for Christchurch. And went on with their lives. What happens when it happens to most of your country? You know, as it did in Haiti. They had like 250,000 people die just like that. Imagine if that happened where you are. A disaster of such epic proportion that it defies reckoning. What would you do? Are you prepared? Do you have 40 litres or 100 litres of water stored away in large containers? Do you have a boat handy? Do you have a survival pack? Do you have first aid kits? Do you have stored food? Do you have weaponry? Do you have training? Do you know how to raise crops? Do you know anything about animal husbandry? When I think through this list of things that you really need that are incredibly handy in a disaster and also a post-collapse world, I find myself knowing quite a lot of these people. I know a lot of very, very skilled people that are pretty much experts in their field of whatever it is they're doing that has these types of things lying around. So, what about you then? Is that true of yourself? Do you know people who you could band together in a ragtag type fashion to set up a community that's capable of sustaining itself? Do you know any builders or anything like that? You see, plumbing. You have to be able to do all these things for yourself in a kind of little house on the prairie, got nothing but horsepower, quite literally. And if you've got enough engineering know-how, steam power, you could be all right if you knew how to do that. But the reality is most do not. Survival is something that everybody has to take incredibly seriously, especially in times of deadly disasters. Now, some people would say that I'm fear-mongering by telling people to get prepared for hard times. How is that fear-mongering? Because aren't bad times inevitable anyway? Doesn't the night eventually come after that beautiful day? Come on. What have people got against being prepared? It's like, don't worry, Vinny, the electricity supply is always going to be there. Stable government's always going to be there. Public order is always going to be there. Food supply is always going to be there. Water supply is always going to be there. These are massive assumptions. And no society in all of history has ever managed to maintain a high supply of all of these at the same time. Very rarely at the same time, let alone perpetually. Now, we've got technology and all of that kind of stuff, but we also have a fake oil industry, which artificially inflates prices so that people think that this resource is scarce. It's not scarce at all. They found trillions and trillions of barrels of oil and huge reserves all over the world and then ordered not to drill them because it would bring the oil prices down. When you can get a barrel of oil out of the ground for as little as $2 a barrel in some areas of the world, and they're charging on the open market close to $100, soon to be $200 a barrel, it makes everybody think that that resource is very, very scarce indeed. It's called artificial scarcity. They do it to drive the prices up. Not entirely dissimilar to that of the drug war. When you make something illegal, you put the price up. When you make something scarce, it puts the price up. You are being scammed. Every single one of you that purchases petrol at any point is being scammed massively. And you have been getting scammed for quite a long time. And you've been going along with it because you think that there's no alternative. Well, there are copious amounts of alternatives. All you need to do so much as a Google search. And you can go and watch videos of how to make alternative energy devices that you can plug into your car. I have one in mine. It only cost me $70 and some parts that I can buy at a local hardware store. Maybe an engineering firm or something like that. Some stainless steel coach bolts. But nothing too fancy. It's not that difficult. There are many different ways that you can drive as well to save petrol. So don't think that any part of any crisis is ever just too much to handle. Never think that there is no solution. There is always another way. The only reason why you think there is no solution is because you haven't seen the other way. Because it's been kept from you. Because there's no credible media in this country, or any country for that matter, of any substantial proportion to penetrate the globe's consciousness yet. I think that that time is almost coming. In times of great crisis, people either A1, stick to their leaders, or B2, they look for alternatives. The one that sticks to their leaders, find out what their leader's alternative is. And the alternative is usually the antithesis to life. As many dictators, poor peasantry, have found out over the years. And I'm acting under the assumption here that because there's so many disasters going on all over the world, a lot of them allegedly staged, that the governments will push for more international integration, more control over our lives, and more taxes, and bigger price hikes, bigger food shortages, so every last one of us feels it. And we don't survive. That's the idea, is to get rid of us all. How can you ever live in a society that wants to get rid of you? I've never even been able to fathom that. The level of hate and malevolence that it must require to want you and your family and everybody else in the human race to be snuffed out is incomparable to any kind of terrible person that you'll meet in your life. There's nobody that evil that you've actually come across and met, is there? And those of you who may have met such evil sociopaths, you understand what I mean. When you look into their eyes, you don't see anything. You don't see any life. You don't see any love. You don't see any joy for life itself. Like somebody would if they looked into my eyes. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Will's not with us actually at the moment. There's been a time issue. You guys have just started to have a fabulous daylight savings wound back. But we're not having that until the end of this month because we get an extra month of barbecue. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show live from New Zealand in the South Pacific. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We're broadcasting live from the future, ladies and gentlemen, so we see it coming and we report it to you before you know what's hit you. Now, speaking of before you know what's hit you, we've got a video here right now talking about the nuclear meltdown in Fukushima, as reported by RT or Russia Today. Listen to this.
Sean Burney, an independent nuclear energy consultant from Scotland. Mr. Burney, many thanks for being with us here on the channel. Now, we now know that uranium rods at reactor number 2 at the Fukushima plant were fully exposed for some period of time. How dangerous is that?
That is one of the nuclear industry's worst nightmares. The consequences are that the fuel is no longer being cooled, so you have very energetic nuclear fuel. Within this core, within the reactor, we estimate maybe 80 to 90 tons of highly radioactive fuel. It will be heating up over a period of time, over hours. It will get to a point during which it will be producing gases. Those gases will be building up pressure inside the pressure vessel in Unit 2. And the question is, at what point will they not be able to retain the pressure and there could possibly be a third explosion?
And Japan is widely perceived as being one of the most technologically advanced nations, and now we're seeing them really struggling to cool down these reactors for a third day. Why is that?
I don't think any advanced industrialized society could have coped with what we've experienced in the last 4 days. One of the problems in Japanese culture is at a societal and government level, is this faith in technology. And the problem is with nuclear power, these are technologies that were developed in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. They were designed, these type of reactors were actually designed for use in nuclear submarines. Admiral Richthofen, who was the creator of the nuclear navy in the United States, he concluded that the design of a reactor to fit into the small confined space of a submarine was not the basis for a nuclear power program. And that's unfortunately where we have around 445 of these reactors around the world. So the technology is decades old. The society, the government, the regulators believe that the technology can be operated safely. And if you visit Fukushima, as I have on a number of occasions, it looks very sophisticated. I'm sure the workers there are absolutely dedicated to their job, but there's a built-in psychological complacency that if you're operating something that's so inherently dangerous, when you go to work every day, do you keep thinking about how dangerous that technology is? That would be, over time, rather damaging psychologically. So in other words, they convince themselves that they've mastered this technology. And unfortunately, with nuclear power, there's no second chance.
Well, you earlier described the situation in Japan as a nightmare. And despite these blasts, the government in Japan is insisting that safety levels are fine and that there's no health risk. It's obvious that they don't want to cause panic. That's understandable. But are they really giving us the whole story here?
No, they're absolutely not giving the whole story. They probably don't know the whole story themselves, even though it's only in Tokyo, which is relatively close to Fukushima. Over many years, the nuclear industry and the regulators in Japan, but also in every society, every country that operates nuclear power, you find consistently that there's a lack of transparency, a lack of openness. Maybe they just think, I think arrogantly, that's too much information. Why should we provide that information? So I think the situation in Japan is absolutely critical. The state of the fuel at the reactor number 3 that exploded last night, we know that for many hours, half of the core was exposed. So there's a very strong possibility that the fuel that has melted has already moved down the reactor pressure vessel and is now at the base of that reactor vessel. That could cause huge problems and, of course, major radiological releases. But remember, according to international standards, there is no safe threshold for man-made radiation. So any dose, including the dose that hit the sailors on board USS Ronald Reagan, that can have health consequences. Well, they're not going to drop down dead, but on the ship. But the idea that to communicate that there's no risk from any radiation is clearly wrong.
Well, let's just clarify what you're saying there, and let's go back to those two explosions that we've already experienced on the Fukushima plant. Apparently, released radioactive substances, radioactive substances were released into the atmosphere as a result of those blasts. What sort of danger does that pose?
Well, certainly the particulates, these are the larger size of nuclear materials, radionuclides, they will be falling out relatively close to the plant. What you will find further away are the so-called fission gases. These are highly mobile, very, very small. They basically rapidly disperse, and it really depends upon the wind, the weather system. If you have rain, which is predicted in the next 12 hours, any radionuclides that are coming out, there'll be a local concentration. When it's dry, and over the coming days, it's dry weather is predicted, then you can have more rapid dispersal over a longer distance. And the latest I've heard is, of course, that the wind direction is switching from the north to the south, which is bad news for Tokyo, because Tokyo is only an hour away. And what's fascinating and terrifying of this situation is the French government, through their embassy in Tokyo, advised French citizens, because of the seriousness of the situation, which they said cannot be predicted and will not be known for a number of days yet, they advised French citizens to leave the Kanta region, which is metropolitan Tokyo, Gumi, and other areas around Tokyo. That's maybe fine for the French citizens, but there's 42 million people living there.
Okay, Mr. Sean Burney, an independent nuclear energy consultant from Scotland, many thanks for speaking to us on this topic.
Yeah. And following on from that, even more good news, this posted by After America at guerrillamedia.co.nz. Japan's nightmare gets even worse. All three damaged nuclear reactors now in meltdown at tsunami-hit power station. Now, when they say that one reactor is going offline, just bear in mind that one of these power facilities may have several reactors. In fact, this one's got about six. And three of them are damaged and in meltdown, according to this report. Fuel rods appear to be melting inside. Three are overheating, the experts class development as partial meltdown. It's a bit of a Freudian slip there. Molten fuel could burn through reactor safety shields. And the earlier blast at Fukushima nuclear plant felt 25 miles away. It was the enormous explosion I referred to earlier. Up to 160 people so far exposed to radiation. That's a lie too, because there's a heck of a lot more people have been detected all over the freaking place. The Japanese nuclear reactor hit by the tsunami went into meltdown today as officials admitted that fuel rods appear to be melting inside three damaged reactors. That means that there is a risk that molten nuclear fuel can melt through the reactor's safety barriers and cause a serious radiation leak. And just bear in mind that this is kind of like Chernobyl times 1,000. All right? And Chernobyl was Hiroshima times 1,000. Yeah. So it's a get your bloody potassium iodate. Get your seafood. There have already been explosions inside two overheating reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, and the fuel rods inside a third were partially exposed as engineers desperately fight to keep them under control after the tsunami knocked out emergency cooling systems. Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Yukio Edano said it was highly likely that the fuel rods inside all three stricken reactors are melting. Some experts class that a partial meltdown of the reactor, but others would only use that term for when molten nuclear fuel melts through a reactor's inner chamber, but not through the outer containment shell. As fuel rods melt, they form an extremely hot molten pool at the bottom of the reactor, which can melt through even the toughest of containment barriers. Japan is fighting to avoid a nuclear catastrophe after the tsunami. There was a hydrogen explosion at the reactor in Unit 3 of the power station earlier today, which 11 workers were hurt by the blast that was felt 25 miles away. So, like I said, it is a real crisis, okay? And this is just not for the Japanese, this is for everybody. Everybody worldwide will be affected by this, sooner or later. More likely sooner than later, particularly the west coast of the United States, because the jet stream is going to carry all that stuff right on you. Mm-hmm. Get it together, people. As if living in America wasn't bad enough. 100,000 homeless in Japan. Understandable. Without electricity. About what happened in Christchurch. You know, so all terrible, terrible stuff. 300,000 homeless. It's the kind of disaster story that you see in the movies. And quite frankly, I've watched that film 2012 a number of times. There's something that really, really gets me about that film. I don't know if it's the fact that everybody else and the whole world is being erased while only one family escapes. You know, for some reason you think it's going to be your family and you won't be part of the billions of others that get wiped out. Well, I don't know. Is there some kind of sick fascination that we have now implanted in us that wants us to look at disaster, to feel that fear of it happening to us? Or maybe it's that we now notice it because it's reported on more. I mean, guess what? The people of New Zealand have been hearing about every single day for several hours, pretty much, if you're listening to any mainstream media source. It's the Christchurch earthquake. And now the media reporting's cut back a little bit on the Christchurch earthquake. Now it's about half and half with the Christchurch earthquake and the Japanese tsunami. So what's everybody going to be thinking about then? They're going to be thinking about disaster. Nothing but disaster all the time. Imagine that's going to freak everybody out. Don't you think? Keep everybody on edge. Maybe start purchasing food and water and survival supplies and things like that. Cause all the prices to go up. But the big rush for everybody to get prepared for a massive disaster for all we know won't come. That's an interesting consequence of society, isn't it? We all react with the information that we're given. And if we're not given decent information, or if it's just one-sided or something like that, because I believe in looking at all facets, even the crazy ones. The crazy ones are particularly interesting. Yeah, and most of the crazy ones make their way into the mainstream media mainline false left-right dichotomy in Parliament or government of any kind. It's the people who believe so blindly they're willing to sacrifice everybody else for their idea. Oh, man, doesn't that just seem just a little wrong to you? The people that you elect to protect you, you know, as if you need protection from somebody, are the people that are most likely going to rob you and or kill you, statistically speaking. And after all, we get robbed every day by the government. And every now and again, a lot of people get killed by their government. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Well, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Hook up there and subscribe to us, support the show, support the Vinny Eastwood Show economy. We'll be right back.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine, plowman dig my earth. None will ever.
They're going to come and take it all. That's right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, where you can check out our fabulous archives, subscribe or donate to the show. We have no good news to speak of. As you understand, when you're monitoring news sites and things of that nature, there is no good news, predominantly. And if it is good news, or at least purported to be good news, it's unimportant, right? Like nobody says the frickin' news article "cure for cancer found," even though many have been. Nobody has that news article. That's always "cure for cancer found," like with a question mark, and it's like some description of a pharmaceutical drug that had like slightly nominal test results. Well, it's probably killing all the rest of the test subjects. And then everybody's saying, oh, great, it's going to be available in 5 years. And then it never comes on the market anyway. Come on. That is the good news we're supposed to be looking up to? Heck no. Here's some good news for you. The Vinnie Eastwood Show .com has gotten up from, I think it was like 200% in the past 30 days, right? There is a nominal amount of support for this show growing, and I hope, I'm not sure if it is, whether it's just like SIS has suddenly employed a heck of a lot more people, or or people actually do listen to the show and enjoy it because of the fabulous guests that we have on, and, you know, because we joke about stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's something that people like, and maybe it's just something that people get really, really offended by, and they just do it so that they can get ammunition against other truth movement people to demonize them. But in either case, I'm okay. Just as long as I get to do the show. All right. I'm sick to death of having somebody else tell me what to do when I'd rather just, you know, run the show and make sure that everything's all honky-dory and take suggestions from everybody and have a look at what everybody's talking about and just basically put it out there. Put it out there. Come on. Why not? What do you got to lose? I don't understand why people kind of whinge about the fact that we don't have any media in this country and they don't even bother to go and look to see if there is one. You know, and I would act under the assumption that if Mr. News Guerrilla Media, my YouTube channel, is number one for partners in the in New Zealand YouTube channels, even passing New Zealand Herald TV, which is a mainstream media publication, then I think that is cause for celebration. Yes, indeedy. Because finally, the people who I bring on the show can start getting the real recognition that they deserve. There are so many activists and commentators and guests and people of all walks and prescriptions and paradigms alike that have come onto this show because I called them and asked them, would they like to come on a show that has a decent amount of listeners that are all really intelligent, awesome, cool people, and just talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about? You know, that's what I do, because I think that everybody needs to have a say. They really do. And there's no possibility that they'd ever get on any mainstream media show, by and large, because what they say is too truthful, too controversial for mainstream media TV. Doesn't matter what kind of horrible black headline it'll cast, if it really does cast doubt on the establishment as a whole, mate, you will not see it. And if you do see it, it'll be taken away very quickly and not mentioned again. But there is the duty that I feel to the people that listen to this show and all of those who don't as well. Your life is being threatened by tyrannical scumbags and you need to be warned about it. Otherwise, you will just be lambs to the slaughter. You'd be jumping on cattle cars before you know it. I don't want to see that kind of thing happen because history always repeats itself. And right now, it's frickin' 1937 Nazi Germany. All the legislation, even legislation that Hitler himself didn't want to put in place because it was too controversial, too restrictive, is being passed now in the United States. And similar legislation is being proposed, if not already being passed, here in New Zealand, okay? The whole world is going to hell because psychopathic criminal gangsters run the place, all right? You are at the mercy, more or less, of a ruthless pack of control freaks who have no interest in giving you free energy, who have no interest in giving you healthy food that isn't poisoned, who have no interest in you having a happy or healthy life or anything that resembles it ever. For your entire lifetime, understand who it is that you are dealing with. I understand it. I also understand that the one thing that these criminal psychopathic leeches on humanity's frickin' back hate more than anything else and frustrates them perpetually is laughter. That's right, scumbags. If you're listening too, and all you cops out there listening in to try and check up on me, you know, I don't care, all right? You're going to get taken out too, because they always turn on their honor guard first so that you don't spill the beans. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Final segment of the first hour. We talked about some interesting and quite horrifying stuff. The reality that is the Japanese quake. Maybe it was coming to a place near you. And also the nuclear reactors. Let's not forget about those. And make sure that you've eaten some dang sushi to keep yourself healthy from the Japanese radiation and simultaneously to support the Japanese economy. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, where you can read all these articles and watch these videos for free. Check it out. And don't forget to donate or subscribe. We'll see you next hour. Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. I believe if you search on Facebook now, Guerrilla Media, you'll come up with my little account there that I'm using, Guerrilla Media Mr. News, for anybody that wants to get in touch with me on the Spy on Everything You Do book. I love the Spy on Everything You Do book. It's great. In fact, interestingly enough, about, I don't know, something ridiculous, like nearly a third of all traffic that goes to gorillamedia.co.nz and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com comes in through Facebook. So, you know, for those of you who would bash Facebook and say, oh, it's scary stuff, et cetera, et cetera, and I don't want to have an account there, essentially what you're doing is you're shooting yourself in the foot, because it is an incredibly awesome marketing tool, you know, internet marketing tool. Seriously, people use Facebook. They use it quite a lot. All right? They like it for some reason. It allows them to communicate with copious amounts of people about stuff that they wouldn't ordinarily hear about. Mm-hmm. Talk about things that you don't normally hear about. Good news. As Professor Farnsworth says on Futurama, good news, everyone. There are going to be a lot of people attending a protest on May the 1st, which is incidentally International Workers' Day, which is incidentally also normally the celebration of a cannabis ritual called J-Day, and which is incidentally a satanic holiday. You just love it how the coincidences pile up. A protest is going to be held outside the New Zealand Parliament buildings at midday till 3 p.m. on May the 1st. It's the Idiots in Power protest. There's going to be a lot of people there because the fact of the matter is, and I happen to agree with Chris Wingate, who we've had on the show before. I would recommend having a look for him on the archive sections of this show. I believe 2010 would probably be the best bet. And 2011, of course, we have had a few interviews. Now, the reason why, and this is not speculation or anything, everything's so screwed up is because of parliamentary and judicial immunity. They can get away with it because they can. All right, that's basically it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news, broadcasting live from the future from the fabulous fortified fluoride head paradise of New Zealand. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly bringing you another hour of incredibly intense news and opinion. One consideration that I've been, you know, pondering for these past couple of days in light of all these disasters happening, I wonder, are they connected? Are they connected? Are we heading for a real big turning point in the natural history of the Earth where we're going to have a heck of a lot of very, very dangerous stuff happen to us? There's some thought out there that this new moon that's coming up, biggest moon ever, apparently, and is closest to the Earth, strongest pull, will trigger some earthquakes. Some are saying that. Other people, like geoscientists, say it's not possible. The moon doesn't have an effect on earthquakes, even though it's known that even the sun, with its radiation, has an effect on the magma that comes underneath the crust of the Earth. And so too does the pull of the moon. Magma movements underneath the Earth are very, very vital in terms of tectonic plates because they sit on an ocean of it. Okay? So this is why a lot of people are now being concerned about some sort of global catastrophe, including the Russian Institute of Physics of the Earth. A new report released today in the Kremlin, prepared for Prime Minister Putin by the Institute of Physics of the Earth in Moscow, is warning that the Americas are in a danger of suffering a megaquake of catastrophic proportions during the next fortnight, 14 days. with a specific emphasis being placed on the United States, Mexico, Central America, and South American West Coast regions, along with the New Madrid Fault Zone region. Runs down the Mississippi Delta there. This report further warns that catastrophic earthquakes in Asia and the subcontinent are also more than likely to occur, within the 7.3 magnitude quake in Japan today being one of at least four of this intensity to occur during the same time period. Now, I'm not 100% sure exactly what the quake was, because I've heard people saying it's as high as 9.1 and saying it as low as 7.3. So whatever it was, it had to be somewhere around the region of 8.9 or something like that in order to achieve the biggest quake in Japan's history status that it did. It released 8,000 times the energy of the Christchurch quake. 8,000 times. Can't even imagine that. Oh, raising the concerns of a mega quake occurring, this report says, are the increasing subtle electromagnetic signals that we're being detected in the Earth's upper atmosphere over many regions of the world, with the most intense being over the US, western, coastal, and Midwest regions, where Benjamin Fulford says that the alleged earthquake weapons were fired from out of bases in New Mexico and Arizona. Important to note that Russian and British scientists are at the forefront of predicting earthquakes based on these subtle electromagnetic signals and have joined in an effort to put satellites in space to detect more of them. More ominously in this report, a Russian scientist confirming the independent analysis of New Zealand mathematician and long-range weather forecaster Ken Ring, who predicted the deadly earthquake in Christchurch and this week issued another warning of a quake to hit on or about March 20th. Ken Ring explains his methodology for predicting earthquakes as follows. The planets very much affect the Earth indirectly by having an effect on the sun. Some planets are very large. If the sun has a basketball, the gas giants Jupiter and Saturn would be the size of grapefruits. And the Earth could be, on that scale, the size of a peppercorn. Jupiter and Saturn cause extra tides on the sun when they get on either side of the sun, as with the moon and Earth and sun when the moon is full. And when these gas giants get on the same side as the sun, as with Earth, the moon and the sun when the moon is new, these greater solar tides become sunspot activity and solar flares and can be understood as akin to the increase in tides caused by the moon when it too gets alongside Earth or opposite Earth. At the moment, we have Jupiter and Saturn on either side of the sun and creating a tug of war with the Earth in the middle. That started last September and will continue until about May. And in September, the sun was right in line with Jupiter, Saturn, and the sun too, when the other Christchurch quake happened. Now, what a lot of people don't understand about the sun is that it also, you know, like I said before, can affect earthquakes in some way, shape, or form. I'm not 100% sure on the science of this, but this is what some scientists are saying. That it has, again, gravitational pull on the magma and can cause seismic shifting. Okay, so, you know, it's pretty straightforward. If you've got enough of a gravitational pull, just like there's a bulge in the middle of the Earth about 450 feet higher in water than is around, say, England. Okay? And fossils dug up from a long, long time ago, When you cut them down, you can count all the little rivets that they've made. You know, kind of like counting tree rings. Every year you have one ring encroaching one on top of the other. Well, these have these things, and the years calculated out were 400 days long. So there is some things that happen to this Earth that change the length of the days, and I'd theorize that maybe every now and again with these big
planetary alignments where there's a huge amount of gravity pulling us in one particular direction, the Earth might actually be pulled towards it a little bit off of its regular rotation so that maybe the days become longer or shorter or something. I suppose if you got closer, the days would be shorter. I don't know. Maybe that would only be if the Earth rotates a little bit faster and then, you know, the days get shorter. So who knows? Who knows? Very interesting. Anyway, and this is the thing, you know, people need to learn how to just talk about stuff and just talk about stuff and talk about stuff and talk about stuff, even if you may not necessarily agree with it, because it's through talking through things that you gain to some level of understanding of one another. And something that the Canadian Indians found particularly useful when young, rich, foppish sort of characters would come in from the from the old world and try to get them to sign these pieces of paper, you know, sign away their land and stuff like that. And the chief would just keep talking and talking and talking. And the guy's like, what are you doing? Just sign the freaking thing, you know. I don't need to hear any of this. And he'd be tapped on the shoulder by his translator and just say, hey, look, you're not listening. Okay, keep talking. Keep listening. And for some reason, out of that particular practice, Canada doesn't get in very many wars. Because I just get, it's just like when the Americans would go, okay, that's it, I'm going to kill you. A Canadian would go, all right, that's it, we need to talk about this more. Maybe that's racist. Oh, but the hilarity of it, eh? See, if you just can find it in your heart to keep listening, even though you want to switch off, you find you might actually learn something for a change. You know, isn't that interesting? You listen, you learn. Uh-huh. Now, speaking of which, that's why, seeing as this planetary alignment is happening, that's why there were several 7-plus earthquakes around, and it wasn't just for us. For example, there was one in Pakistan on the same day as Christchurch, and this Jupiter-Saturn alignment continues until about May, and the Earth comes back into line as well in March. And it is why there may be an extreme event, perhaps a large earthquake, around 20th of March, which is when the Moon may be again in a trigger position. According to this report, however, where Ring is correct in assessing blame for our Earth's earthquakes on the Sun and planets, his substituting of Peringian spring tides, also known as king tides, for the low-pressure systems associated with them may be incorrect. The mention in this report of massive low-pressure systems being associated with catastrophic earthquakes is especially dire to the United States Midwest region, which even today is continuing to be pounded by horrific rainfall amounts and almost especially impacting the New Madrid Fault Zone state of Arkansas, which has suffered over 800 earthquakes in the past 6 months alone. Equally in danger, this report continues, is the South American nation of Bolivia, which has likewise suffered catastrophic low-pressure system storms that in the past week have killed over 52 people. Now, maybe there's something to this, because the ancients, for some reason, associated planetary alignments with disaster. And you know what? I think that ancient cultures are a lot more advanced than we give them credit for. You know, all we've seen is their ruins, so we know they didn't survive. Doesn't mean we're going to, you know. Somebody could be picking through the remains and find an Apple Mac laptop or something like that, and they go like, wow, these people back in the day must have been really primitive. But still a lot more awesome than being able to, I don't know, just map every single frickin' planetary alignment and movement from just looking at the stars, perhaps. You know, where'd they get all this information from? Isn't that interesting? Because that's what happens when somebody tells you something that's like well far out, you know, that's something that is just unbelievable. Sounds ridiculous, sounds silly even. Where are you getting this information from? If the source is some guy who was puffing on a crack pipe in the street, and you kind of think to yourself, hey, mate, well, that guy was crazy. But if it comes from a Pentagon official or a CIA retiree who's in the business for 22 years or something like that. Then you think to yourself, man, that guy must be crazy. That's what people do. Doesn't matter. Whatever appears crazy to them is automatically crazy. Doesn't matter who says it. Why do people do that? I don't understand. You know, it's almost like they don't have any trust in humanity or human beings in any way, shape, or form. And maybe that is a problem, but maybe it's also a good thing. I always say that a suspicious mind is a healthy mind. But another warning part in this story here I've been reading out is quite interesting. Most ominous in this report, though, is its warning that the fault-riddled state of California may be about to suffer its most catastrophic earthquake in decades, as new reports for this region show the mass death of millions of fish is now occurring, and just like the mass stranding of whales on New Zealand beaches days prior to February 2nd destruction of Christchurch, making the situation for our planet even grimmer are the reports that our sun is continuing to spew forth massive solar flares, the latest warned to hit Earth today or tomorrow, thus prompting the Hermanus Space Weather Warning Center, or SWWC, they're good at wrestling apparently, to issue a solar flare warning for the Southern Hemisphere. Interesting to note in all these events is the United States Army announcing this week that it is holding a rare training event involving the U.S. military, the CIA, Canadian officers, U.S. Treasury and State Departments, the U.S. Agency for International Development, the Defense Threat Readiness Agency, and the International Red Cross between March 21 and 25 at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and which, should the worst happen, they will certainly be prepared for it. And this is obviously a coincidence, right? Right? You know, government says, no, all this stuff is just quackery. And it turns out this big alignment's happening. And at the exact same time, a huge military operation in preparation for a disaster happens to be happening on the same day. What do you think the likelihood is, the statistical probability of those two things being a freaking coincidence? Okay? They know that something is going on. You think freeze-dried food is sold out worldwide because everybody just suddenly felt like, oh, I'm a little bit extra hungry this year and I'm going to have to store some eggs? No, because they think a freaking disaster's coming on an epic magnitude, people. Come on. It's not that hard to figure out. All you got to do is read a few articles, and it's pretty clear. And if the consequences are absolutely, absolutely important to you to know in detail, then you have to do your own research. Do a lot more of it. Make sure that you're the person who understands. You can't rely on anybody specifically as the one and only news source for me. Heck, I don't listen to any one news source more than I listen to any others. I listen to them all. Well, at least I try to. In my limited human capacity, I try to listen to as many different news sources as possible. Make sure that I'm not being deceived by each and every one of them. Because if they're all saying contradictory things, then I have to do my own research if I really want to find out. But sometimes it doesn't matter because I'm going to be doing the same thing anyway, which is doing the Vinnie Eastwood show, getting the information that is available now out to you today so that you can at least be facilitated in some way of doing it yourself. And that is the goal here. I would consider that it's an important role that I'm trying to play here, and I'm not doing it for the glory or the fame or the whatever. You know, somebody said the other day that Charlie Sheen's acting the way he's acting because of the fame. He's just doing it for the fame, he said. I'm just like, well, dude, you don't destroy your entire career to get more famous. You know, okay? You don't kill your career in order to advance your career. I mean, are you stupid? It's pretty foolish, right? If I was doing this for the money, I would have quit by now. In fact, I would have quit years ago. It's not about that. It's about serving my country and serving my people and trying to save human life. You know, it's important to me. It should be important to you too, because you've only got one of them on you at the moment and several others if you're a parent, unlike me. You've got more than one life that you have to take care of. So I suggest you get informed so you can do it with the maximum efficiency that comes from being a well-informed, free-thinking, critical-thinking individual. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I've been everywhere. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, going out live to 26 AM FM stations worldwide. Big shout out to our listeners in the US of New Madrid Fault Line, or the former USSA, as I've come to call it. And on the line here, we have another Kiwi collaborator for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's my esteemed pleasure, an honour, in fact, to welcome Nando Tanchos, a former member for the Green Party in Parliament. Nando, are you on the line with us?
Yeah, greetings.
Hey, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, mate.
Thank you.
If you could just please give everybody a little bit of a recap about yourself, because we have a foreign audience in a large capacity and they may not be familiar with who you are, mate.
I'm just thinking of that, the almighty saying about the kumara doesn't boast of its own sweetness. I've been an activist pretty much all my life, ever since I discovered the Sex Pistols and heard the word anarchy, decided to find out what that was, and been involved in various grassroots movements my whole life. I lived in England for a while and was involved in the Stonehenge festivals and the peace convoy, the anti-miner strike where Margaret Thatcher was hammering into the, trying to destroy the mine workers' unions. And here came back to Aotearoa and have been involved in, again, quite a few different things here. Spent a long time involved in cannabis law reform and drug law reform as one of the, what I think is one of the cutting edges of the civil rights issues and what we have is an incorrect balance between the power of the state and the rights of individuals. So that's something I've been interested in for a long time, involved in the anti-GE movement. And then in 1999, I joined the Green Party. Well, I joined a couple of years earlier, but in 1999 I was elected as a Green MP, an MP for the Green Party here in New Zealand. First Rastafarian in the world to be elected to a parliament, as far as I understand. And probably my main issues there, again, drug law reform, but also constitutional change, justice and civil rights, and open source software is something I'm interested in too. So I've got a fairly eclectic range of interests.
Well, you know, and I've seen a couple of interviews with you, Nando, and the interesting thing I find about you is that it is not a specific base of knowledge that you come from. It is a broad spectrum of experience, knowledge, and what I would call an expertise in the understanding of complex systems and how the government and indeed the world works, which is why I kind of wanted to invite you on the show, because in my opinion, we've got a very, very, very bad system in every sector of society at the moment. You know, the healthcare, government elections, civil rights, the economy. Everything seems to be going quite fairly awry in a lot of cases. And what a lot of people are saying now is that, look, the core issue here is the banking system, the international finance leaders, World Bank, IMF, are inflating all our currencies, and the big banks and Wall Street are making up all these big derivative bubbles, and essentially they've created so much debt out of a computer that the global economy will never recover. And this is something that is currently affecting everybody. I mean, the of course, our government, what was it, according to BNZ, we're now borrowing $450 million a week to stay afloat. You know, well, and it's just difficult to comprehend. I wanted to know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are very important. I mean, you know, and thank you for your kind words earlier as well. And I mean, I guess for me, I look at the challenges that we face in the world today, and they're immense. You know, we've got the. You're quite right when you talk about the financial institutions and the way that the fetters have been let off the kind of financial trading sector, and that was quite a deliberate move and has created horrendous side effects. While some people have got extremely wealthy, and we've seen the gap between rich and poor increase in countries like New Zealand, and I believe it's the same in the United States and places like England as well. But to me, that's one issue. You know, there are other issues which are equally important and urgent. And of course, we face the issue of climate change, which is gathering pace. We face the issue of peak oil, the reality that we're coming to the end of cheap oil, and our whole civilization, if you want to call it that, is built on cheap fossil fuels. And when we come to the end of those. You know, that creates real problems. And, of course, there's some people who'd say that the great recession that we've just been experiencing, and it's questionable whether we're coming out of it or not, but that's, as well as the whole issue with subprime mortgages and derivative trading and all these things, that one of the big issues there was actually the price of oil, that when the price of oil went up, due to this kind of, you know, we've got this growth, or... We're starting to hit the gap between the demand and supply. When the price of oil goes up, it means people are unable to pay off those loans that have been so easily and cheaply available. And that's what actually brought the whole deck of, you know, the whole house of cards, I should say, coming down. So yes, I think those financial issues are extremely important, but they go hand in hand with an ecological crisis, which in some ways is more fundamental. And underlying it, in my view, is a psychological problem that in the kind of the philosophy that's driven Western industrial society is no longer, it certainly is no longer functional in the world that we live in that, you know, we have to start to understand ourselves as part of nature, not separate from nature. We have to see ourselves as part of the web of life, and we have to take our place humbly and appropriately among the web of life that we're part of, because the capitalist system, yes, it is driving not just this kind of financial meltdown, but it's also driving ecological degradation, because it's built on a model that says that growth is good at all costs. Growth is the only measure of economic well-being according to the way we currently do things, and so therefore, you know, growth is good, more growth is better, and of course you can't have unlimited growth on a finite planet. So there's a fundamental conflict between this kind of economic system that we invented. It's a figment of our own collective imagination, and it's coming hard up against the physical realities of the planet that we actually live on. So, so I would say, like, climate change, peak oil, financial meltdown are all symptoms of a deeper problem, which is and that manifests particularly in this kind of capitalist economic system that we're part of now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have some disagreements with you there. I mean, I would debate whether or not it's actually capitalism. I don't think what we have is a free market at all whatsoever. If anything, it's just a gangster market occupied essentially and controlled by very few players. You know, the large financial banking institutions, they have essentially formed a cartel over global finance, and now the world is starting to wake up and sort of realize the hold that these very few large players actually have, and more to the point, the enormous hole that they're creating for everybody. And the economic instruments of our time is basically oil, you know. conveniently, it's the second most abundant liquid on Earth after water. And apparently, the Russians have been doing deep core drilling since the 70s to find these enormous reservoirs of oil, and discoveries are happening now all over the world, where they've unearthed trillions and trillions of barrels in particular reserves. I believe the Gulf of Mexico, where this big oil canic eruption happened, was the discovery of one such reservoir that ran from the Gulf of Mexico up until midway through northern Canada. It was that large. So the peak oil thing, I'm sort of wondering that now, because if we're discovering far more reserves than we've ever found before, how can there literally be that much plant material or anything that's actually, you know, come back and done that? And on top of that, we have wells in Texas. Remember during the oil price shocks of the 70s that had dried up. And now they're full of oil again. They just turned the pumps back on after leaving them dry for a decade or two. It's like, what? There's something really bad going on.
I mean, my understanding is that America's policy on oil has been to reserve its own. Like, when Hubbard predicted the peak oil in the continental USA, and he did it accurately as well, my understanding is when that actually registered, that the American policy has been to hold on to their reserves and to use up everyone else's oil. And so now we see with the price of oil going up because of the unrest in the Middle East, we're seeing America now starting to tap into, you know, make some of those reserves available again. And it's the same policy on rare earth metals. You know, we have 97% of the world's rare earth metals come from China, but they only hold about 30 or 40% of the world's reserves. It's just that it's extremely toxic to do, so we let them do it. And also it's a way of we can use up all their rare earth metals, and in the case of the States, which has quite a few reserves, they can hold on to their own as a strategic advantage. And my view, that's what they've been doing with oil. But in terms of these massive new reserves that are coming online, well, I haven't seen any evidence of that, and I guess I'll reserve judgment until I actually see it happening, because I've heard a lot of different ideas about wonderful new sources of energy, and I haven't seen any of them bear out yet, so I'll wait and see.
Okay. Well, that's cool. At least you'll have a look at it. you know, because most people just kind of flat deny and refuse to look. You know, that sort of, I presume that you've had that during the course of your political career, that when you're talking sense and you've got facts and evidence, and people will just, you know, hit you with this wall of no, like cannabis law reform, for example. It's freaking hilarious.
I think on most issues, probably a lot of people make up their mind on an emotional basis, and then they look for the evidence to justify their point of view. And I see that happen all the time. And I guess the thing is, as activists or as human beings, I think we have to go beyond that, and we have to. I mean, sure, we all. I think, you know, I mean, I look at myself. The positions I take start from an emotional reaction to the world around me. I think I see a lot of injustice. I see a lot of unnecessary environmental degradation going on. So my response is emotional. But then in looking at the evidence, I like to think that I'm open to evidence that counters my own point of view. And I'd like to think that at least some other people are the same as well. Because I think, you know, the reality is, if we're not actually open to our opponents' points of views, then we're never going to learn anything. And that's one of the things that I think. One of the criticisms I'd make of the kind of progressive movement in general, if I can term it that way, and by which I kind of encompass kind of green politics and left politics and different kinds of what I'd call progressive politics. One of the difficulties that we face is that we can be a bit kind of self-righteous and think we have all the answers, and we actually diminish our own understanding by doing that, and we weaken our own position as well.
I completely and utterly agree with you, Nandor, and that's just that's exactly what we need to hear now, you know, from politicians and from activists and things like that, is the willingness to listen to your opposition with an open mind and just, like, base it, weigh it up with the evidence. Because one thing that I've noticed in particular, being a paid member of Greenpeace for a while, was that now a lot of our Greenpeace activists who are going out and talking about climate change, you know, they're basically just these foreigners who have come in from overseas, and don't know anything about climate change, haven't even heard about the IPCC, and they're trying to encourage people to go to the Sign On campaign. And then when you try and tell them about how carbon trading is actually really bad, how it's another bad financial instrument, that, you know, you get totally demonized. They accuse you of being from an oil company and things like that. And it's like, no, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we don't want to give the bad guys any more tools.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Nando Tanchos, coming in live from New Zealand. Check us out on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with the archives there. We'll be right back after this very short break.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business, it's business time.
Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's business time on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. My marvellous special guest is Nando Tanchos, live from New Zealand. Nando, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinnie.
Hey, yeah, that's all good. Let's not get too emotional here. Hey, one thing I wanted to know from you, mate. Parliament itself is having a bit of a protest on May the 1st, the Idiots in Power protest. And one thing I wanted to talk about with you is this false left-right dichotomy position where we look at National Party policy, Labour policy, and find out that for all intents and purposes, they're virtually identical. They don't propose a radically different systems. You know, it's almost like there's no real difference between the right and the left anymore. You know, they've become centrist, so that the voting blocks of people out there will inevitably always wind up voting for a government that won't bring any different kind of government into the play. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, you know, the whole notion of left and right is kind of, in terms of parliamentary parties, was redefined when the fourth Labour government came in 1984 and basically unleashed a neoliberal revolution on the New Zealand economy and policies. And so then National was left with a thing of, do they try and outright Labour? But that was extremely difficult because they were so kind of new right. And then so National tried to jump over in that way, and then Labour kind of came back in 1999. But basically, both parties have now decided that the best way to power is to congregate around the middle and try and outbland each other as much as possible, and do nothing that offends anyone or upsets anyone, and try and keep it all lowest common denominator kind of stuff. And you're quite right; that leaves us with virtually no choice. It's a choice of style. Now, do you want a man or a woman? Do you want do you like his suit or do you like his suit? Or, you know, that's kind of, well, except that, you know, that's kind of the image that's presented to the citizenship. But on the other hand, I mean, I do think that with the National Party that's currently in, you know, well, we've seen them start to reveal that their agenda of privatisation of the few remaining kind of state assets that we have, and these kinds of things, which I don't think Labor would do. So there is some difference, but their difference is on the economic fundamentals and the social fundamentals. They're pretty much the same. And that's a real problem. And so in New Zealand, we're hearing talk of, you know, will we see a new left party start up? And there was a lot of speculation when Māori Party MP Hone Harawira left the Māori Party about whether he would kind of be part of starting up a new left party with people like Matt McCartan and people like that. And the interesting thing was, you know, because with the New Zealand system, I mean, for the American listeners, I kind of feel sorry for you guys because your electoral system basically means that you don't get any kind of minority representation. In New Zealand, we've moved to a proportional representation system, which is a lot fairer because it means you do start to get Green Party and other kind of smaller voices represented in the legislature.
Unfortunately, the same type of bollocks goes on in Parliament as it does in the United States. Isn't that true, though? I mean, it's like the United States and New Zealand, I find, are very comparable in a lot of ways. You know, we each get very wealthy, very evil people elected to rule the country.
I think that's true, but I think MMP moderates that. As I said, you no longer have like two block. You know, it's not Labor versus National or Republicans versus Democrat as it would be in the States. With MMP or with any kind of proportional representation, you start getting other voices. So it's not two power blocks. They're broken up. And that means that, say, National now is in power, but to get legislation through, they don't have a majority in Parliament, and so they have to make coalitions and they have to do negotiation and they have to start to listen to some of the other voices. Now, some of those other voices I don't like, but nevertheless, it does mean that they have to listen to other parties, and so I think it kind of breaks up the kind of duopoly power thing that goes on. And I think also in New Zealand, and probably partly because we're smaller and less powerful, that I don't think you've seen the same kind of big money involved. You know, election campaigns are largely run on quite a lot of money, but if you look at the electoral expenses of the Green Party, it's actually quite small. So you know. You're now at a position where you can start to get some representation in without having to have massive corporate funders. Now, that's when I say some representation, that doesn't mean that the Greens or anyone like that runs the government. But what it does mean is that there's a Green voice in there, and the Greens, under certain circumstances, get to have some influence. I think PRs are, you know, I definitely encourage anyone who's got a kind of first-past-the-post system to try and get themselves a PR system, because it makes a huge difference in terms of what gets represented.
Indeed. Representation is decent. Thanks, Nandor, for coming on, bro. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Vinny. Good to talk to you, bro.
Oh, man. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Any final words for our listeners there, mate? Oh, well, he seems to have gone.
advert for the Constitution. I've just been reading this book called 1491 by Charles Mann, and he puts up a theory that the American Constitution was significantly based on the Constitution of the Haudenosaunee, who's an alliance of northeastern Indian tribes. It's quite interesting because I hadn't been aware of that, but it's a good book for your American listeners to read. 1491, the true history of America before white people got there.
Cool, man. Thanks very much. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, and we'll be back tomorrow.